Peace. Yo, we back. Where my killer tape at? Season 7, episode 124, Friends and Co-Conspirators. Yo, we gonna talk about what a friend is, right? Shout out to everybody for Pride Month. I'm gonna do two book reviews. One, on We Do This Till We Free Us and The End of Policing. I'm gonna talk about what a co-conspirator is. And let's talk about critical race theory real quick. You know what I mean? And much, much more. Word, check it out. Killer tape at, B. For episode 124 of Where My Killer Tape At, I'm sipping on Chasing the Horizon IPA by Perennial Artesian Ale. Man, it's perfect. It's smooth, dry. It's what I like. Shout out to the Barrel House for always putting me on to them new IPAs. Word. So I call this episode the Friends and the Co-Conspirator episode because shout out to the homie Joe. He and I served on the same ship together in the United States Navy decades ago. There I go. You know what I'm saying? Aging myself. Decades ago. You know what I mean? When you know how does that Slick Rick song goes? People wore pajamas and they all was good. Something like that, right? Everybody wore pajamas. Yeah, that time when we used to use pagers and pay phones and stuff like that and taxis. And the internet was just a thing that you saw on that show, Quantum Leap. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't even called the internet back then. But he literally had Wikipedia. He had a tablet and he had Wikipedia in that joint. But anyway, he came through and he was like, yo, you should dedicate this joint to friends. You know what I mean? And I'm like, no doubt. You know, how does that song go? Friends, how many of us have them? And yo, one thing I'm going to say about Joe, like an example that he really sets forth is that he really keeps in contact with cats. So like, we was going through my ship. My ship had a yearbook. Quote, I don't want to call it a yearbook. It was a cruise book because it commemorated the cruise that we went on. We went on the Mediterranean cruise. And I could go through I could point out to certain people in the picture. And Joe would be like, oh, yo, I hung out with him on this day. He's doing this. He's doing good. He's doing this. He's married. He got, you know what I'm saying? Oh, by the way, back when I was in the Navy, women weren't allowed on combatant ships. So it was all men until like my last year in the military. Then they let women on combatant ships, just to throw that out there, the historical joint. Anyway, so he's just that type of dude. And I think that's something that I have to commend and really like admire, because it's a hard thing to do to keep in contact with so many people. And we knew the thing about the military is that there are people that are always going in and there are people that are always going out. There are people that are always transferring to your duty station and people that are transferring you out. So it's real easy to forget people. You know what I'm saying? But he maintained contact with everybody much more than I did. You know what I mean? And I'm not, you know, the Navy was good to me. I'm not even going front. And you know, like I met some really dope folks. But I always saw it as like a chapter in my life, and you know, I moved on to other things. So I, you know, I met new people and made new connections that were connected to what I was doing at the moment. So, and that's not an excuse, because that's, you know, that's not an excuse at all. I got to do better. So this one goes out to friends. You know what I mean? Now let's talk about co-conspirators, right? Because everybody likes to use allies. I never actually liked that word. I read Sun Tzu, Art of War a lot. You know what I'm saying? It's been a while since I read it, but I used to read it like twice a year. And allies has never like felt cool around me, man. You know what I mean? And I'm a geek, so I read a lot of science fiction and allies weren't all that great. But I prefer the term co-conspirators. And I got that from Tea with Queen and Jay. They kind of like always bring that up. And I kind of like that, man, because like if we're going to be down, we're going to be down, right? If we're going to be down, that means we're going to drink together. You know what I mean? We're going to do dirt together. So that's how I kind of feel like a co-conspirator is. So and that's the reason why I named this episode Friends and Co-Conspirators, because that's how we should need to be. And I'm not saying that like everybody got to be that way. I'm just saying that I want to be a co-conspirator. So if you need me to break locks or whatever, you need me to put hands on somebody, you need me to take lumps, then I need to be that for you, man. That, you know, and I say this to the LGBT community because they take a lot of lumps and that's not right. You know what I mean? So if we about that life, sometimes you got to take lumps for them too. You know what I'm saying? So if I'm going to be a co-conspirator, I'm about dismantling all this white supremacist capitalist patriarchy, or should I say white supremacist capitalist hetero patriarchy, right? That's how we need to do this, right? So, yep, that's what I mean by co-conspirators. Word.
Okay, so I want to talk about what happened with the Capoeira organization, known as Cojao de Oro. We refer to it as CDO. And the head of that organization is the Mr. Suasana. And I'm going to refer to the article released by Publica, which is a Brazilian online newspaper. And they wrote an extensive piece on what Mr. Suasana and two other messages of his group have been accused of, everything ranging from sexual molestation to sexual predation, sexual assault, just pretty much double crimes across the gamut. And I recommend that you read that article, and I'm going to put it in the show notes because I think it's important. And again, it is very detailed, so trigger warning on that. Trigger warning is very, very detailed. Let me just say this, that I speak for my Capoeira organization, loosely called Capoeira Dayton, but we condemn those acts and we do not condone that. That being said, we are working to figure out ways to make sure that our Capoeira hold out or circle is safer for all of our students, especially the most vulnerable, which is young people and women. So we're going to work on that and we're still trying to figure that out. We also are going to have another show about that and interview some other people that are in Capoeira. We're going to talk about that extensively, about the solutions that we have. And just to say that, in my opinion, when I think about Capoeira, I think about liberation. And I think about creating spaces that are safer for anyone that comes through our doors. And sometimes I've failed in doing so. And I am guilty of uplifting those individuals that have been accused of that. Of these heinous crimes. So we are going to continue to work. I'm going to continue to work on making sure I become a better co-conspirator and someone who supports the victims. Because oftentimes when these things go down, the victims are left by the wayside, and we're going to try to figure this out together. So again, I condemn those. I do know people that are in CDO who are innocent, and I will continue to work with them and make sure that they have safer spaces and that we continue to help them make a living. But to the victims, I say that, yes, even I am part of the culture that made you a victim. And I'm going to try to figure out ways to not do that to anyone else. And we also got to figure out how we're going to do reparations. So we are a work in progress. I've been here before. I've talked about it ad nauseum about it, and I will continue to talk about it. Because in this case, we have to look out for the victims. I know this statement probably will not alleviate the pain that you have suffered as a victim. It's probably not assuring at all. I'm going to be honest with you, but we are working, and that I can say that we're doing. So, and if anybody has any questions, feel free to hit me up. All the information will be at the end. If you want to continue to have this discussion, we will continue to have this discussion. Well.
The thing about this discussion, I don't even think it's a discussion of critical race theory, is that I quite honestly, unless it's like a African-centered school, because there's some African-centered like elementary schools and high schools, you know, sprinkled throughout the country, no public school or private school, for that matter, is teaching critical race theory. Again, there's exceptions to that rule. I know of one school personally, I haven't attended, but I've been in the building where they taught critical race theory. And I'm even going to say they taught critical race theory a la Derrick Bell, right? Because when we talk about critical race theory, we're talking about Derrick Bell, Faces at the Bottom of the Well. Please read that book. We're talking about that critical race theory, because just because I say white supremacy doesn't mean I'm actually teaching critical race theory. You know what I'm saying? So like, critical race theory is like teaching Marxism, meaning, you know, Marxism is a theoretical framework that you got to teach, you know, Karl Marx, you know, Frederick Engels. You got to teach from the book, The Communist Manifesto. You got, and you know, how it affected economies. You got to get into all of that. And most schools, public schools, and public and private, they teach Marxism, but from, you know, like, oh, Marxism is bad. You know, communism is bad. Like, the Soviet Union was our enemies. Like, they teach it from that perspective. It's not until you get to college where you actually learn about what Marxism is. And a lot of times, you know, and they teach that if you take economics, if you like an economics, you will learn about Marxism. If you're a sociologist, you will learn about Marxism. If you're a historian, you will learn about Marxism. You know what I'm saying? And you will learn the theory. You'll probably read the Communist Manifesto. You know, as part of, but it, they look at it like they look at the Roman Empire. You know what I'm saying? So you know, and again, you know, I don't, where am I going with this? I don't know. But anyway, they don't teach critical race theory in school. That, you know, so all this shit about, and then when you get to college, you they don't teach you critical race theory in college unless you take a course. It's not mandatory. It is not. Whether you're a political scientist, sociologist, even if you go to a HBCU, you have to actually like take a class of that. I say, hey, I want to, and it's an elective. It's not like you have to take it to graduate. So this idea of that it's a mandatory, it's mandatory for you to take it is bullshit. You know what I mean? So like when I see that, I'm kind of like, what are y'all talking about? You know what I'm saying? Like no one is teaching it. Did I teach critical race theory in my class when I taught middle school? Yes, but it wasn't. Then again, I didn't give tests. So it's not like you had to like take a test and, oh, you don't know critical race theory, you failed. You know what I'm saying? I taught it, you know what I mean? But I'm going to say it right now, 99.9% of schools, public or private, don't teach it. So when I see this shit, it's kind of like the GOP is really good at this, right? Because the GOP will be like, oh, trans athletes are taking over and shit. And they're not. You know what I mean? And they try to pass all this legislation. And a lot of it is because they're speaking to their base. That's really what it is. They're like speaking to the base of their party. And they want to come off as conservative. You know, like, oh, we're conservative and, you know, liberal media and bullshit and all that. And you're just like, bro. So it bothers me that it's a debate. Like, it really does. It really. And I get mad at the Democrats because they're not saying that shit. They're not like, yo, they don't teach it in the class. What is you talking about? Why are we wasting our time with this? You know what I mean? So it's frustrating. And that's all I really got to say about that, is that I'm frustrated and I'm upset. Before I go into Miriam Kaba's book, I do want to talk about another book, which I think will be a great companion to this one. And this one is The End of Policing by Alex Vitale. I wonder if I'm supposed to be saying Vitale or Vitale. It's V-I-T-A-L-E. It's pretty accessible. You can actually find the PDF online. I highly recommend this book. I think, and this came out about 6 years ago. Alex Vitale does a great job of taking every argument that's pro-police, you know, and debunking each and every one using statistics, data, case studies, anecdotes. And he talks about police departments, not just around the country, the United States, I mean, but also around the world. It is fascinating. And I mean, literally every argument you can think of, any case you can think of why we should have police, he pretty much says no, and here's why. It's a pretty quick read. I highly recommend it. I know some people look at the size and they're like, oh, wow. But if you're considering abolition, even if you're not considering abolition,
It's a good piece to read because he talks about the different reforms that were used on police and why it didn't work. And he uses several case studies. Again, like, I just don't understand why this book, like, more people haven't read this book. You know what I'm saying? Instead of reading the books that are on the New York Times bestseller list now, they should have been reading this book, The End of Policing. I know for a lot of people, the police means several things, even if you want them to end police brutality. But again, a great companion book to Miriam Kaba's We Do This Till We Free Us. So, and I was reading it, just happened to be reading it at the same time, and I'm like, man, Alex Vital really, really addresses those. So definitely, I highly consider that book for anybody. Highly recommend it. For the month of May, I read Miriam Kaba's We Do This Till We Free Us, Abolitionist Organizing and Transforming Justice. If you're considering being an abolitionist, whether you want to be a prison abolitionist or a police abolitionist, any kind of work which calls for abolition, right? I think this is the book you should read. It's a short read. It took me about 2 weeks to read it. I probably would have read it sooner, but you know, I usually read a couple books at a time. Miriam Kaba is an OG in abolitionist organizing. She's been doing it for decades. So if there's an expert on it, if there's somebody who's been doing the work, she is that person. And she's worked on several different campaigns. She's worked with several different organizations. Again, OG. What I like about this book is that it's a series of essays that she wrote and a bunch of interviews that she did. I really like the interview portion of it. I like the entire thing. But my point is that it's kind of like the book I read on the Combahee River Collective. It was a series of interviews with the founding organizers of that organization, of the CRC. And I learned just much more, much faster in Q&A form. So I can say the same thing about Kaba's book. There's a lot of interviews that she's done over the years and people ask specific questions and she answers them. So really, like, if you're someone who don't get what abolition is, who's like, I don't know what the fuck y'all talking about, I recommend this book. I really do. And I know, because I hear a lot of people, I see two things happening. I see people say that abolitionists are tripping. And then I see people who are using the buzzwords all the time, right? Because defunding the police can mean several things, you know, but abolishing the police is a different thing altogether. Prison reform is one thing. But prison abolition is a completely, totally other thing. And a lot of people like to mix those words up. So if you're somebody who like see those words and then you kind of like mix it up, again, I think you should read this as well because she really differentiates with it. There's a part in the book, like in the beginning of the book, where if you're wondering what they're calling for, right? You know, like, because a lot of people are saying that abolitionist work is unrealistic and it has, you know, but the thing about that is that you have to have imagination. It really is what it is. It really is. But anyway, she does say that what we could do right now is organizing for dramatic decreases of police budgets and directing those funds to other social goods. You know, ending cash bail, which I think needs to be done now. Overturning police bill of rights. Abolishing police unions, which I think we should do right now. Disarming the police, which is something I never thought about. Creating abolitionist messages that penetrate the public consciousness to disrupt the idea that cops equal safety. I think that is important. Evaluating any reforms based on these criteria. Building community-based interventions that address harms without relying on police. And thinking through the end of police and imagining alternatives. So, like, those are the things that, like, people could do now if they feel like abolishing the police is not the thing. But what I like about Kaba is she's saying, don't get it twisted. You know, these things are okay for now, but that's not abolishing the police. So, again, I'm still on the fence about prison abolition. I know it sounds wild, right, that I'm for abolishing the police, but prison abolition is a different thing. I'm still kind of working on that. But I like the fact that she talks about how justice is not punishment and it should not be punishment. So that's something that I'm really thinking about. So, again, if you have any more questions about the book, let me know. But I recommend you copying it. Word. For this health segment, I want to say this real quick. And I know that I always talk about staying hydrated. But I know, first of all, the pandemic is not over. But a lot of people, because X amount of people have gotten vaccinated. Please get vaccinated, by the way. A lot of people are going out and they acting a fool and they binge drinking and day drinking and all that. My word of advice to everybody is to please stay hydrated when you go out. You know what I mean? Please. I know everybody's going to these festivals. Everybody's turning up, going to barbecues, parties, graduation parties, everything. And they're going to be outside in the hot sun. Please, please stay hydrated. Please stay hydrated. Do that. Drink plenty of water before you go out. While you're out, after you get home. If you're going to be out in the sun all day cooking, please stay hydrated. Word is born. I can't stress that enough, man. Word.
For this episode of Where My Killer Tape At, I do want to give a shout out first and foremost to the homie Joe. I met him on the USS John F. Kennedy. I love you. It is dope to see you, and it's dope that I'm going to see you again next month. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have even a better time. So, shout out to my homie Billy Wheels, who, when I met him, I was already out the Navy, but he was still in the Navy. So shout out to that brother. We became homies and brothers, really, technically, because of our love for De La Soul. Shout out to the big homie Emery. My fault. I was not a good friend while you was living close to me. I didn't come visit you until my brother from the same mother pulled up. And that is going to change. Shout out to my old Zulu comrades. You know who you are from all over the country. Even though we are no longer in Zulu together, I still love each and every one of you. Then shout out to my capoeira students who really, if anything, I have been a student to them because they have taught me much more about myself and the world than I taught them about capoeira. So thank you for that, and I can't appreciate that enough. And then shout out to the big homie Misty Create. You've been instrumental to the show. You've always given me good ideas, and you just like really just been helpful. I don't think this show would be possible without you. Salute to all of y'all. Word.
There you have it, another episode of Where My Killer Tape At. If you want to book me for workshops on capoeira, b-boying, or breaking, actually, right? Hip-hop culture up until a certain point, or black male feminism, you could definitely hit me up on my website, omisbench.com, and that's omisbench.com, like Writer's Bench. If you just want to hit me up, the official Twitter for the show is Omis Podcast, OMIS Podcast. Or if you just want to hit your boy up, just go to my regular Twitter, if you can handle it, at Dan Trezomi, DanTresomi. If you want to continue the discussion online, just use the hashtag Where My Killer Tape At. And that's K-I-L-L-A. That's how we spell killer. And yo, buy my coffee mug, man. Support the show, man. I'm on a mission to sell 100 coffee mugs. It'll be in the show notes. Word. Peace.